Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's BudPod 198.
198. I am great because it was my birthday.
Yes.
Kind of. 2 days ago was my birthday. I'm an older boy now. I'm wiser. I'm stronger. I'm faster. I'm smaller. I'm so tiny now. I can fit into small crevices. Because that's part of getting old.
Yeah, I'm becoming like a sort of crab.
Yeah, that's right. Or a salamander. Or an octopus. And just slink through tiny gaps. I am now 33, Pierre. My Jesus year. This is
This is
the year I finally start preaching and get executed by the state.
This is cancelled the year. Or cancelled by Twitter.
Yeah, it's a modern crucifixion. In many ways, it's worse. In many ways, it's less civilized.
In many ways, it's worse.
Yeah, that's the kind of language that accompanies a bad online comic of people all looking at their phones and walking off a cliff. That makes you think genre.
Yeah. A sort of newspaper style cartoon where a kid who's too old for nappies is wearing a nappy looking at an iPad.
Yeah.
Well, a big classroom where all the kids are wearing nappies and looking at iPads, and there's a teacher at the front. Dressed as like a teacher from the Victorian era, like the Beano with like a mortarboard and a cape, and he's shrugging at the viewer like, "This is what kids are like. What are you gonna do?"
And then you can see out the window that's a really beautiful day and a lot of like animals running around, and there's a big lovely tree.
Yeah. There's a confused
and, like, a
rugby coach
that no one's playing on.
There's a sports coach shrugging.
Everyone's shrugging.
They're all shrugging at the youth.
But anyway, the youth is ever more a community I am not allowed to be a part of, Pierre. I'm slowly sneaking away from it, but I had a fun birthday nonetheless. I went to Athens in Greece for the weekend.
You went to go see the Oracle.
I went to go see the Oracle to hear her advice on my upcoming battle with the Persians.
Yeah.
See what she has to say. It turns out I should funnel them into a narrow passage where their great numbers will count for nothing.
Yeah. Unusually specific advice from the Oracle this time.
Very specific. Usually the Oracles are like, beware the two-horned beast, for only when the final olive drops in May shall the salt return to Ithaca.
Yeah.
But she was just like, you want to channel them into a narrow tunnel. I think she's had enough. After millennia of people misinterpreting her enigmatic advice, she's now just telling it straight.
Yeah, she starts every prophecy now with, so apparently I wasn't being clear before.
So yes, I got some really good advice about some battle formations and shield overlapping techniques, but also I got to have some time with some friends. Unfortunately, Pierre, you weren't able to join.
I could not.
You're too busy being a wireless man on the wireless.
That's right. Me and Frank Skinner and Emily Dean on Absolute Radio. My commitment, which which isn't itself a podcast, but does spawn a podcast.
From Arrival. Your head, like Athena from the skull of Zeus.
Yes, this is it. This is what you've been picking up on the ground and in Greece.
It was great. It was really good. I've never been to Greece before at all, and I've always been a great lover of the Greek myths and of Homer and the Iliad and the Odyssey and all this sort of thing. So it's
Assassin's
really great.
Creed.
Assassin's Creed. I did think a lot of the time when I was there, oh, it's like Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And because Assassin's Creed are really good at their research, there are bits where you go, oh, I've run up here. Like, I've run up the steps to the Parthenon before. Yeah, this all looks right.
Okay, but, yes, it's mad, isn't it?
It's crackers. When they made the Egypt one, they had a secret chamber in a pyramid that hadn't been officially announced yet or something. Or they'd guessed at it. And then a couple of months later, these Egyptologists found the secret chamber in the pyramid. But Assassin's Creed already had it. They really do. Yeah. Pretty crazy. They really do put the effort in.
Is that why I saw that archaeologist on the news with that glowing set of armor?
Yeah.
He looked like he had plus 10 health, plus 20 maybe.
Yeah. He was just punching all the other archaeologists and defeating them. He was defeating them all.
The DLC archaeologist.
We got a tour up the Acropolis.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I kept singing, we're going loco up in Acropopo. I sang that all day.
Yes, good. Okay. In the heat.
I guess it wouldn't be that hot. And you saw the Parthenon, and we went to the Parthenon Museum they have next to the Acropolis, where they have all the marbles that they kept. And yeah. they've built a beautiful display on the top floor of their museum where they're basically recreating the layout of the friezes and the metopes and the pediments. And it was a beautiful museum.
How many did they keep? Do they have quite a lot? Or do we
have
them?
They have quite a lot, Pierre. They have more than you think.
Mm.
They have more than you think. And this is part of the reason, and this is a BudPod exclusive, Pierre, and I know people don't say this very much these days, but I've changed my mind.
Ooh!
I've changed my mind about the Elgin Marbles. I think they should be placed in the Acropolis Museum in Athens with the rest.
Ah, you want to fill in the gaps?
This is it, yes. Classic autist. You knew exactly what my main objective was.
It's
not that I think they should be in Greece because they're Greek, but I saw all these gaps.
Yeah.
And because you and I went to the British Museum a week before to see what we have, I knew all the pieces are filled in the gaps. And it was so frustrating not to just be able to just click them in.
I suppose you were looking at a more accurate representation of a simulation of what it would be like, so a better hole for the gaps.
And they put in these very white sort of recreations to fill in the gaps where the pieces are in the British Museum, and they're all these very passive aggressive notes that say they all say temporarily unavailable. They're very sassy.
That's funny.
Yeah.
There's not a guy taking you around saying, and this is where we would put this one, if we had it. jabbing his finger at all the British people in the group with his umbrella.
And the main... my main justification for this is my completionism.
Yes.
I think all the pieces should be together, and they might as well be next to the Parthenon in the Acropolis, because it's just the most completest version. It's just the most completest arrangement.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it was interesting when we went to the BM to look at them, because I think my mind changed because of 3D printing technology.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought, well, I don't own this. I don't care if it's an original Picasso, as it were. I just want to look at the rock, right? I just want to see what it looks like. And if we had a 3D printed version made of plastic or concrete or whatever you want, I could fucking lick it or whatever. I'd do whatever I want.
Oh, I see. So you think the British Museum should have replicas that we can just go fucking crazy with?
Yeah, it wouldn't matter. Like, they could just... the British Museum should scan them, which you can do with that kind of scanning radar, whatever it is, like perfect imaging. You could sell that. People could have a Parthenon marble in there as part of a display in their garden.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. This is true. But then, is it worth having that in a museum? Is it worth having replicas in a museum when they just have to, when they just get rid of the gallery altogether?
But they've already got a replica of the Rosetta Stone. That's much easier to go look at because everyone's crowding around the real thing just because it's the real thing.
Yes.
And they'd have to have something about ancient Greece. It's not like they're going to go, well, we've given those rocks back. Take it all down, boys. And all these like ancient Greek professors are being like thrown in a big bin.
But the thing with the Rosetta Stone is they do also have the Rosetta Stone. But a lot of the purpose of the British Museum is they have the actual thing. So to have a display that is purely a simulacrum, I think would start to drift. It would drift the purpose of the British Museum away from what it is.
I suppose so. I mean...
And soon it'll just be an escape room, Pierre, because everything ends up in an escape room.
in central London.
Gonna be, yeah, it's just going to be an ancient-themed escape room in the middle of London.
But as long as it was themed so accurately, I'd be like, that sounds sick. That sounds great.
Yeah, that
as long
cool.
as it's like... It's the pedantic accuracy that won me over. The potential for pedantry. Whereas in the olden days, they'd be like, oh, we have a plaster cast. And you'd be like, well, I don't know about that. Could be
right.
Anything could have gone wrong. It's dangerous to cast things out of plaster. You can fuck up the original.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
Whereas now, they just go, this is down to the fucking atom. A perfect replica of this interesting thing. Like... When I was going and looking at them, I was interested in the artistry and how it looked and why it looked the way it looked. I didn't, as long as I could be confident it was a 100% accurate replica, I didn't care if it was the original.
Oh, I did. I think there's a definite value loss if it isn't.
Yeah, I suppose, but there's no educational loss.
No, but I think that's a very the purpose of the museum is not just education. It's about Marvel, right? It's about
well, I suppose, but I think that's where it shifts from history and academia and understanding humanity to just bog standard tourism.
Well, but it is part tourism. I mean, the British Museum is part. Museum, but mainly it's a collection, really. The British Museum is a collection, and you don't collect replicas.
But the trouble is that, like, I think they could have the replicas for someone who's interested in that, but they've got so much stuff underneath that they never display.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying I don't think there's any point in doing a replica display of the Parthenon marbles in the British Museum. That's all I'm saying. I think they should repurpose the room. I think they should put other shit in there because, like you say, there's so much stuff that is in storage.
I think they should have replicas and then either bring them out every now and then or, I don't know, have move it to a back room or whatever. Because I think it's still worth it. Maybe they could make it a better reproduction if they just did a full-scale reproduction. Scan the ones in Greece.
That would be very funny if the British Museum returns the Ilgen marbles and then builds a full-scale, 3D-printed, perfect replica of the full Parthenon.
And do it as it would have been, so it's actually better.
Yes. Yes, with lit braziers inside and an enormous statue to Athena. Yes.
There can only be one winner. Out of all our celebrity guests, our celebrity contestants, who will take the final incredible prize?
You're all here to compete for one of the biggest privileges in this line of work, yeah? Because from all of you, right, we've gathered you all together, you're going to host a new show. If you win, where you get to pick the new hosts for the next Great British show. Yeah? So all of you are a bunch of celebrity hosts. We've got Paul Hollywood, Matt Lucas, Mel and Sue, Greg Davies, the other one, Alan Sugar, yeah, Anton Deck, you're all here. And we're going to make you host things to see who the best hosts are. Right? If you win, you get to host the competition that will find the next hosts for the great... Which one is it now? The Great British... It's not that, is it? That's a Halloween special. Cocktails. Right, it's cocktails. We've decided. You'll host the Great British Cocktail Off. Shake off. Shake off. Right, that's it. Shake off. Because you can shake a cocktail. That done. Right. Get hosting. Yeah? You've got 10 minutes left to host. And the winner will host the... I've explained it. Good luck. Good luck, hosts. Okay, 10 minutes left to host. Timmy Swift to host, everybody.
Plus, if it was replicas, we could see what they look like painted.
Oh, well, this was the other amazing part of the Acropolis Museum. So, I didn't know this, but before the Parthenon, there was the pre-Parthenon, which was...
It's like a thinner, more runny version of the Parthenon.
But you can still get pregnant from it, Pierre, so you have to be careful.
You can still praise Zeus from it. You better watch out.
It was bigger than the Parthenon. It was still under construction when it was even bigger. It was even bigger, but it was under construction when the Persians attacked, and so it was never finished. And then when the Persians stopped attacking, they built the normal Parthenon and they gave up on the pre-Parthenon. But the pre-Parthenon, all the statues that came off of it were buried under the soil on the Acropolis, which protected the paint. So they have all these pre-Parthenon sculptures, which are even older than the Parthenon sculptures, and they have paint left on them. There are snakes with like colored scales and priestesses with colored red hair. It's amazing. And this paint has been on there for 2,500-3,000 years.
Wow. And are the colors like incredibly gaudy? Because I had read that.
They must have been at the time, but they're sort of muted and faded, that now they're very tasteful.
They're obviously muted now, but I mean, you can still see the choices that were made where it's like, I don't know why it wouldn't go purple, red, purple. Like, ugh.
Well, purple would have been very expensive and basically impossible to find, right? But there's a lot of red and blue and some green. It would have been gauche for sure.
Yeah,
but it was still very cool to see all this. That was the main thing, Pierre, about being there, being walking around the Parthenon in the same place it's been for 2,500 years. All the shit that's happened, and those rocks were in that place, in that position, just sat there. All the sunrises and sunsets it's seen, all the rain that's washed off it, all the wind that's blown through it, all the time. All the things it's seen, the world wars, the Industrial Revolution, the start of Islam, the start of Christianity, start of, Judaism? All those things happened and those rocks were stood there. That roof was standing. Crazy. I think. I think it's the oldest thing I've ever seen. I can't think of what old it's. How old is Stonehenge?
It's Bronze Age, so it certainly is in the running.
So is Stonehenge older than the Parthenon?
This is the real World Cup.
The Parthenon is thought to be older than Stonehenge.
Really?
The Parthenon is also older than the pyramids. That's surprising. I thought the pyramids were older.
I think it depends which ones. Or what do we mean by Parthenon?
The Parthenon is... it's that set of...
I suppose it's tough because, like you said, there was a pre-site and...
Wait. This is too old. The Parthenon's not this old.
I think people.
This isn't correct.
This Parthenon comes right off.
This isn't correct at all. Look, we're getting into the weeds here.
So Stonehenge is, 3000 to 2000 BC, I think.
Yeah, that's older than the Parthenon. Okay, so Stonehenge is the oldest building I've ever seen. Can you call it a building?
It's been built.
That's right. It was built. That's right. By good, proper British builders, Pierre. Proper British building.
Yes. Okay. So Parthenon, 500 BC.
That's right. Yeah, 500 BC.
There we go. Yes. Okay. So Stonehenge is about 2,500 years older than that. Bronze Age, very old and mysterious.
Oogly boogly.
Hang on, Phil. Oogly, very oogly boogly. That's what I said. That's what I say whenever I see anything from the Bronze Age, because it's so mysterious. The Iron Age, you know where a man knows where he is with iron. But with bronze, I don't know. A lot of creepy shit from that era that doesn't make a lot of sense. Phil, what I want to know, your impressions of Greece, the modern nation you'd never been.
Oh, my impressions of Greece, the modern nation.
Was it just Italy with lamb?
I liked the Greeks. The food is good. The wine is good. It's all a little more, it's a little rougher, I guess. It's just a little rougher. But very easygoing, I thought. I guess I didn't really have all that much enough experience with Athens and the modern city to know for sure. Although
it's always seemed very chaotic to me.
It is kind of chaotic, what does strike you is that it's not as economically strong as the rest of Europe. And you kind of think, oh God, is this where Britain's heading? Are all great empires destined to end up like this eventually?
Yeah.
But on the whole, I thought it was pretty chill. The people were nice. The food was good. On the final night, Pierre, my friend Elsa and I, we went to this bar, which was one of the 50 best bars in the world. There's this ranking of the 50 best bars in the world. And we went to one which had a Negroni that in 2019 was one best cocktail in the world. It was pretty good. Yeah, best cocktail in the world. And then we looked up the 50 best bars in the world, and three, including that one, were in Athens. And we went, fuck it, and we went to all of them. So we went to all three bars in Athens that were the best in the world. I've never done that before. I've never been to three of the 50 best bars in the world in a single night. It was really fun. In the last one, there was a drag Greek Orthodox priest DJing. That was fun. He was great.
But he wasn't a real priest.
No, well, he was a priest of the beats, and that's all that mattered to me.
That's true, yeah, okay.
He was a priest of rhythm. In the Church of Sound. I've realized I think male to male drag is my favorite genre of drag.
Oh, okay, interesting. Okay. So
he's a guy
not
dressed up as a guy, but in a drag.
But with crazy makeup on.
Yeah. And I suppose I guess an element of drag is sort of making fun of authority in some way, right? Or being sort of anti-establishment in some way. So I guess you'd have to choose a man who in some way is of a higher authority than you. And so he chose a Greek Orthodox priest.
Interesting. Okay. And were there any jokes, or was it just sick beats?
It was just sick beats. And then got a photo with him after, had a little chat. He used to live in Camberwell. He was nice.
That's amazing. But now hang on. This Negroni, Phil.
Oh yeah.
It was just fine. This is the best cocktail in the world.
It was really good. It's called an Aegean Negroni. It was like fluorescent blue because they use some blue curacao or something. Single cube of ice and a single leaf placed on the cube. It was very, very nice. It was perfectly balanced. That's the thing about Negroni. It can be too sweet or too bitter or whatever. This was perfectly balanced. But they had another drink, which was a gimlet. It was a Greek salad gimlet. And they managed somehow to simulate the taste of a Greek salad in a drink.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's tangy. It tastes a bit like green pepper. There's a bit of olive oil in it. And they'd coated the glass with yeast, so it tasted like you're having a bit of bread with it. It was so
Willy
good.
Wonkopoulos. Willy Wonkopoulos, the Greek chocolatier.
Willy Wonkopoulos, yes. Wonkopoulopos, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I always wonder how they judge these things, because, like, if let's say I'm the judge for the cocktail awards of the whole world.
Yeah.
I presumably live in America. Mm-hmm. Or maybe France.
You almost certainly wear suspenders and a trilby.
I wear suspenders and a trilby.
And you complain about women not liking nice guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're always saying that women don't like nice guys.
And they like their cocktails too sweet.
Yeah.
But do you just fly to Athens and get battered for, what, a fucking month?
I guess so. I guess they must get like a tip off after as to which bars are good. I mean, it's clearly not a perfect process, because the second bar we went to was fine. It was fine. And I was like, this bar is meant to be better than what? Millions upon millions of bars in the world. It was fine.
There's a tip off from like a tramp. I mean, like a mad alcoholic. This is a good one. Like, I got to text the awards. Who's doing the tipping? And after a while, like, do you just fly? You just go, well, I'm really tired from my flight, so I've got to go have 7 Negronis now. I hope some of them are memorable. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and I don't really know how you, because surely there's a point in the night where drinks are nicest, depending on how much alcohol you've had. So there's clearly a benefit of where your bar is placed in this judge's schedule. Right,
you would have to plot the scores on a sort of curvature graph to account for that.
Maybe a logarithmic scale or something.
Exactly, yeah. So the bars in the middle get a handicap of like most satisfying, and the bars at the end are just like completely unreliable.
The final bar, Pierre, had a gimlet cocktail which had gin they'd infused themselves with blue cheese. It was blue cheese infused gin.
Oh.
that was my first reaction too. And then I tasted it, and it was maybe the nicest cocktail I ever had in my life. It was so good.
Was it just amazing. Poured into your mouth through someone's feet?
Yeah, someone's got to our body parts Lewis drink idea, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, what was the cocktail?
It was really good. It's like a blue
cheese filled with
gin,
like just
gimlet.
Jacob's crackers.
Yeah, yeah. I was dunking crackers in it. I instead of sipping it, I'd stick a knife into it and scoop some out and then wipe it on my tongue. But no, it was a really good trip. It was great to see the old world, because I thought this is my Jesus year. I should sort of, I don't have to go full ancient world. Well, this is the ancient world. I don't have to go full Middle East, but I'll fly towards the Middle East and see something really old.
Yeah, you'll do St. Paul among the Ephesians or something. One of the bits of the Bible where they go and tell the Greeks that Jesus was a cool guy.
Oh, yeah.
But whenever they say the Greeks, they actually mean parts of modern Turkey. They don't mean Greece. They just mean all the Greeks that lived in Turkey, the Anatolian Greeks and so on.
Right, yeah. There was a lot of... There was quite blurry lines there back in the day between them Turks and them Greeks.
Yeah, well, the Turks just weren't there at that point.
Oh.
They hadn't quite arrived. That's why every year, whenever sort of like the very worst kind of like Twitter sort of, and I'm saying this as a Remainer, the very worst kind of Twitter Remainer type person will be like, St. George's Day, you mean that Turkish bloke? And he wasn't Turkish. He was an Anatolian Greek. So they just, you know, doesn't make any sense what they're saying. It's not historically accurate. If you're going to try and smugly do it, I mean, if you're really assuming that the person was a racist who you're taunting in your own mind, then they should be just as annoyed about a Greek, I suppose. But
they're very annoying like that about Paddington Bear. That's become the new St. George. I don't know if you're aware. But people are like,
true.
Oh, you love Paddington? Well, wait till you find out he was an immigrant from Peru. Well, our country sure is welcoming to immigrants when they're cute bears with marmalade. But when they're people, it's like, shut up, man. Shut up. It's a cartoon. Shut up.
Like you're just the other side of the coin of those serial killers who are leaving marmalade sandwiches jammed onto the gates at Buckingham Palace. Because
also,
a different person had died.
Also, people always forget that Paddington's from Peru. People aren't thinking about that because they made his voice English. If he came out with a Peruvian accent...
He's incredibly English.
If Paddington had a Peruvian accent in his cartoons, he wouldn't be successful in the UK. A country with basically zero Latin Americans. He wouldn't be successful at all. So it isn't like people are aware.
Also, like, the whole joke, the whole reason Paddington has to be from Peru is because no one in the UK knows fuck all about Peru. It wouldn't work if he was from Germany because they'd go, we have associations with that. Whereas it's like the perfect country to use to kind of baffle children into accepting exotic otherness.
It's kind of like Timbuktu. I'm always astonished when I remember Timbuktu is from in Africa.
Yes,
I'm like,
yeah.
Africa. It feels like I always assume it's like in it's from Tibet or the Himalayas or something.
Yes,
or South
Some
America.
Some of the lot of temples. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I love
like,
the idea.
Timbuktu is in Mali. Oh, all right. There's
I love the
one
idea
in,
of Paddington
Is it in Somalia
Bear.
Or Ethiopia?
It's in Mali. It's in Mali.
No, but there's a similar city with a name like that. Oh, I can't remember.
You mean Ouagadougou?
No.
Timbuktu?
Maybe it is Timbuktu. Maybe I'm just thinking of Timbuktu.
Timbuktu is in Mali.
Yeah, I know. But there's a similar city in either Somalia or Ethiopia that has a name that sounds to me Himalayan, and I always picture a Himalayan country.
Mogadishu?
No, I can't remember.
I love the idea of Paddington being like, marmalade is very nice.
Yeah, his family wouldn't have adopted him if he spoke like that. They'd be like, sorry, I don't have anything. They would just keep walking. They'd be like, sorry, I don't have cash. Sorry, But because he's like, hello. Oh, I was just wondering if you might possibly... That's what makes him palatable to the British public.
Yeah, if he'd been like some sort of like a character from fucking San Andreas. Hey, puto, like some insane Mexican stereotype. Do you think they would have let a German bear live with, I would like to live in your house.
Well,
he's creepier.
The closest we get is Madeline. You know Madeline, that little French girl that sometimes kids in England read about?
Oh, yeah. Yes. What, like with a little straw boater hat or something?
That's it, yeah. And she's an orphan because there has to be something horrible needs to have happened for a British child to be interested.
Yeah, it's the same way that British sitcoms work. They have to be horrible. Everyone's life in a British sitcom is just the worst that could be going. It's so grim.
Well, speaking of grim lives, we should read some correspondence, I think.
Grim, fecal lives.
Ring letters, emails, phone calls, correspondence.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh, this, well, I can't believe I didn't mention this. So, in Pierre, in Greece, the plumbing is so bad.
Yes, I've heard you can't say it.
You can't flush toilet paper.
Insane.
You can't flush toilet paper. Every toilet in Greece has a bin next to it, and you wipe yourself and you put the tissue in the bin, Pierre.
Unacceptable.
In the bin. Astonishing. Astonishing.
You can't.
I the relish with which I flushed toilet paper on the plane home was I wanted to kiss the toilet. It's like, that's on
it's
a plane.
Good to be back.
That's on a plane. The plane's not, the toilet on a plane is better than every toilet in Greece. I was amazed by that. Everywhere you go, public toilet, hotel and restaurant, there's a bin next to the toilet. You wipe your ass with tissue, then you open the bin. The most frightening experience of your life, by the way.
Oh, and opening the bin, just knowing it's full of...
Oh. The bin is invariably stuffed with tissues.
Oh, God.
Famed for their fluffiness, remember?
Yeah.
Famed for their expansive properties. And then you just have to kind of find a little nook to place your shitty little bit of toilet paper in all the whole while trying your absolute best not to touch anyone else's morsel of tissue paper. It's astonishing. I've never had anything like this. God. Malaysia isn't like this. You can flush the loo in Borneo, but you can't in the birthplace of Western civilization. It's extraordinary.
What? I mean, you can't treat having a shitty ass like having a runny nose, Phil.
That was
you
it.
Can't
actually,
say,
I'm just going to blow my ass
and then...
I didn't even blow my nose because I was like, it doesn't feel right to put these things together.
Yeah, ne'er the twain should meet.
Yeah, surf and turf.
Yeah, well, a big bin full of bum wipes is the sort of thing you'd collect up for a juvenile prank.
It was very gross. It was very gross, and that's something I won't miss.
But no,
Oh man,
you didn't see that in the Acropolis.
No. So that was a revelation. I didn't know that. I didn't know anywhere was like that.
No, I've heard that, and it's always put me off. And as you say, a shocking gap.
In a country full of people who eat lamb every day, it's like Jesus Christ, man. Just yam and lamb and yogurt all every day, and you have to make a personal collection of shitty toilet paper.
They like a challenge. Well, speaking of challenges, Phil, we got an email from Jonathan.
Jonathan, what's wrong, Jonathan?
That's good. He says, "Hello, Pooh Buds." Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
I've been working my way through the podcast in the last few weeks of term and have managed to listen to 61 episodes in such a short time that Bin Bags Day, Bum Bum Life, and Koji have forced themselves into my vocabulary.
Doctors do not recommend.
Physicians do not recommend, apart from Andy. In fact, thank you for the kojis to the people who saw me in... I've immediately forgotten where I was. Where was I?
Interesting. They kojied your memory away. Did they koji you like that, the flashlight in Men in Black? Kojied to bits.
Yeah. They Big Penny Black Social. Big Penny Social. Anyway. They've all forced their way into my vocabulary, which is dangerous when standing in front of a class of high schoolers because I'm a teacher in Australia.
Ah.
Yeah.
I'm a teacher. How am I supposed to do work now? That I'm saying bum bum life all the time.
Yeah. Bum bum life.
Bum bum life.
You having a bit cage? Of a beanbags day?
What's a gilded cage? Class, what's a gilded cage? Class.
Your project, you've got to go home and ask your parents if they know. Because I don't get it. So, he says, I also must say my drives to and from school have become more enjoyable and poo-filled than I ever imagined they might, so thank you for that.
Wonderful.
Pleasure.
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 I have a poo story that goes back to my gap year.
Oh, fantastic. Let's hear it. Where do Australians go for the gap years?
They Australia? Tend to they should be bartenders in the UK traditionally.
Ah, right. Oh, yeah, of course, because they get like, was it 2 years or something or a year?
Yeah. Yeah. It's either something like that or just, I don't know, I guess just Thailand.
Right.
As a precursor, I'm neither of the two main characters, but a bystander.
Ah, in the story, I see.
Yeah. During my gap year, I spent several months in a college-type location. Vague. Interesting.
A college-type location. That's an off-brand university. That's like a pirated university that hasn't bought the rights to a university. We're a college-based location.
We're a college-type location that offered degree-like qualifications.
We're a college-type location.
I spent several months in a college-type location where skills in leadership were taught to those from different communities from around the world.
Oh.
It's like the ninjas that trained Batman.
It's quite Illuminati-esque.
Yeah.
You've been gathered here to learn how to lead the world.
How to lead.
Lead your fellow man.
Fear, love.
To glory.
During this time, we lived in dorms of four people, two sets of bunk beds per room. Okay. And naturally, as a large group of 18-something-year-olds, dumb ideas and pranks ran rampant, from corridor slip-and-slides, BB gun fights, to the infamous poo-in-a-bag trick.
Oh, trick. I like a trick.
This prank started when one person from a neighboring dorm decided it would be a good idea to place tea bags inside the shower head.
Right. Okay.
So you screw off the shower head, put a tea bag in, so then the water comes out as tea.
Yeah, that's quite funny.
Yeah. Not so bad, but this continued back and forth between rooms for 2 weeks in which a range of objects were found inside shower heads. Tea bags, tomatoes, Brussels sprouts, and meatballs.
No, I don't like this move towards perishables. I really don't.
Finally, one of the pranksters had had enough. He decided to end it once and for all. And so he deposited his poo into a paper bag and sneakily went into the other dorm room and placed the bag of brown underneath the bottom bunk in the space below. Oh, I thought it was going to be in the shower.
Yeah, I thought it was going in the shower head. I was sure it was going in the shower head.
Maybe that was just too much like biological warfare.
Yeah.
Anyway, when the other dorm group returned,
cholera. That's just gonna make
I'm gonna blind people with my feces.
Ha ha! Got you.
When the other dorm group returned, they noticed a smell, but just assumed it was coming from the toilet that all four of them had to share. So they sprayed the bathroom and left it. The next day, the smell was there, and much, much worse. The blame then fell onto one of the dorm members, as he was told he needs to shower, because it was fucking disgusting. I feel for that guy sometimes. If I recall correctly, he showered four times that day.
Wow, imagine being
So stinky.
So definitely the smelly guy that people don't even think, oh, maybe he's one of the rest of us. It's like, no, you haven't showered enough. It's definitely you. Go back in.
And to be so smelly yourself that even you believe that and shower four times to get rid of your stink. To believe it yourself is so bad.
Yeah, that's so weird. It usually comes off by now. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, usually
give it another go.
Sorry, guys. Usually after the second shower, I stop smelling like shit in a bag. Which is obviously a much worse thing to smell of than human sweat. Eventually, the smell became so bad that all the dorm room members were required to move out to a different dorm for a night or two. Ugh. The next day, the bag was found by one of the dorm members as he braved the smell to fetch some clothing.
Ugh. The stink has got in the clothes! The stink's got in!
The stink's got in! Sausages! Upon realizing what it was, so this guy discovers the poo.
Yeah.
He beelined for the bathroom, collected some disposable gloves, and then snuck into the room of the poo depositor.
Okay. Here we go.
He opened the wardrobe of the perpetrator and the paper bag of now very dry shit.
Ugh.
And proceeded to spread it through all the socks and underwear drawer of the original pooer.
Wait, how did he know this person was the pooer?
This is my question. Did he sign his work with a sort of debonair playing card or something?
Yeah. Did he?
Unclear.
Hmm.
But spread it all the way through those drawers, much like when you're spreading potting mix around a new favorite plant.
All right, let's go dusting. You're like...
Yeah.
Sprinkling. Yeah.
It's fair to say the prank war ended that day, and the original prankster also needed a new set of clothes, which on a gap year program was an expense he had not budgeted for.
Right. So the shit spreading onto the socks and pants, very much the Hiroshima and Nagasaki of that particular war.
Yeah.
It was the moment that everyone went, okay, all right. This has gone a bit too far now. We should probably stop.
Now there's a guy. You know what happened, Phil, is that guy went to the Oracle. And he said, I want to end this prank war on my terms. And here's my plan. Will this end the prank war? And the Oracle said, yes, it will end the prank war.
You must sprinkle the soil of man onto clean linens. Only then will the showerheads be free of meat and tomatoes.
Well, yeah, that's it, because the Oracle said the prank war will be ended by your shit. Like Thingy going to the Oracle saying, I predict a great victory, but not saying whose.
Oh, yes. Who was that? Xerxes? Leon?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. As a side note, he also attaches a craft beer from his local bottle shop. That's Yuzu Koji Rice Lager.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, because Koji,
Koji
is an ingredient in sake.
Koji is an ingredient and a name, which we get tweeted quite a lot.
Ah. Beautiful name for a girl, Koji.
I think it's a guy's name. There's a show, someone in Koji.
Oh. Well,
you don't see the tweets. This is the thing.
I'm going to call my daughter Koji. Thank you, Jonathan. That was Jonathan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you, Jonathan. I hope everything is going well down under. And I don't just mean your ass. Thank you for that story.
I do.
Pierre does. I don't. Hey, another Antipodean news, Pierre.
Yes.
What's her face? Mrs. Honey from Matilda. The world's Mrs. Honey, Jacinda Ardern. She
Yes.
She quit. She up and quit.
She's gone.
Yeah. She's gone. She says she's run out of fuel.
She's knickered.
She's knickered. She's absolutely fucked. She's pooped.
Well, we'll have to save our hot takes on Ardern for the VIP zone.
Yes, that's just a little taster there. So do sign up to Patreon.
For a podcast-like service.
For podcast-type production.
Yeah.
But until next time, I get tickets to Bud Pod Live, March 14th.
Bud Pod Live. Yeah, March the 14th, Leicester Square Theatre, London, Bud Pod Live. Still some tickets left for my extra dates in Soho. Still tickets left for Phil's tour, probably.
Yes.
Yes, good. Okay.
See you all soon. Much love. And send the marbles back to Athens. I'm sick of saying this.
They want it.
They want it. They want it.
They want it.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.